This is More Than Work, the podcast reminding you that your self-worth is made up of more than your job title. Each week, I'll talk to a guest about how they discovered that for themselves. You'll hear about what they did, what they're doing, and who they are. I'm your host, Rabia. I work in IT, perform stand-up comedy, write, volunteer, and, of course, podcast. Thank you for listening. Here we go. Hey everyone, welcome back to More Than Work this week. I have a guest that was really recommended to me by a good friend of the pod and who's also been on the podcast, Eriko Ono, or Ed, as we call her also on that episode. And that was a while ago on my Mother's Day episode when my sister was on and my friend Aaron and Ed. And she does a lot of skateboarding, which is pretty cool. I won't say how old she is, but basically in our age group, and my guest is already laughing, in our age group, it's cool that anyone does skateboarding because we're all at risk for hurting our hips or breaking something. But anyway, Ed does a lot of skateboarding and met this guest at a skate park in Portland. And so we're going to talk to AJ Waters, who is the owner and founder of Stronger Skate Park. So AJ, thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm excited to get to talk to you just because I've heard so much from Ed. But first of all, where am I talking to you from today?
I am in Portland, Oregon.
Awesome. So, AJ, I mean, we have a lot that we can talk about. I don't know if you've heard about me from Eddie, because she usually says how awesome I am, but I've heard a lot about how awesome. I've heard a lot about how awesome you are, and so I am. I'm really excited to talk to you. So, I guess you just want to get into, first of all, just talking about, like, founding your skate park and how you came about doing that.
Yeah, I've been a skateboarder since I was like 12 years old, and I moved to Portland in 2012. And when I moved to Portland, I met some other local skaters and got involved with a not-for-profit group called Skate Like a Girl. Mm-hmm. And then we went to this big event up in Seattle where they had a whole weekend of women's skateboarding events, not just for women, but women focused through Skate Like a Girl, who I'm sure Ed has told you about. Ed loves Skate Like a Girl. And it was while we were up there that people were like, let's do something like this in Portland. Let's do this in Portland. I'm like, we don't have an indoor park to do this at in Portland. Mm-hmm. And that's what really got the gears kind of turning. Then I was like, why don't we? Like, someone should make one. Yeah. And I realized, like, well, if I'm thinking that, you know, I'm the type of person who acts on those things, and a lot of people aren't. They're like, well, someone else should do it. That would be cool. And then they move on.
Yeah.
And I did not move on.
Nice. And so that was in 2012, you said, right?
That was like 2015.
Okay.
When I started thinking about that. 2012 was when I first moved to Portland. It was a couple years of just skating and getting to know the community, volunteering for Skate Like a Girl. For a while, I had a paid position with them.
Yeah, awesome. So when you were with your position with Skate Like a Girl, were you an educator or what were you doing with them?
At first, I was a volunteer skate coach just at their clinics at Commonwealth, which is another little indoor skate park here in Portland. And just, you know, teaching kids how to skate. It was all youth that we were working with at those clinics at the time. And then later, I ran some after school programming for them at the Boys and Girls Club, where I came up with the programming, ran the programming, coached at it.
Cool. So you were starting to do all that kind of stuff. And then you were like, okay, now I'm ready to do my own skate park, basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the time I was between jobs when I started coming up with the skate park idea. I had been nannying when I first moved to Portland, which was a pretty good job when you get a nice family to work for. And I had kind of a mental health crisis and had to quit my job and just lay low for a while and was just doing like gig work and little things here and there. And it was really like going to that big event in Seattle and seeing how powerful it is when you can do stuff with the whole community together. Mm-hmm. And their event was hosted out of a skate park called All Together Skate Park in Seattle. And it was not that big, but it was enough space to be able to like do stuff. And we didn't really have anything big enough in Portland to do that because Commonwealth is like, I don't know, 1500 or 2000 square feet. They're pretty small. So you can't get 100 people in there. So being able to see that and see how powerful it was, I was like, man, we have got to be able to do stuff like this for the Portland skate community too. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of spiraled from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And did it help you kind of through what you were going through too, to have something that you were planning and looking forward to. I mean, I know when I've had, I don't know what happened, but I know when I've had different bouts, even recently, kind of having future plans has helped, certainly.
Yeah, it definitely gave me like a project to be excited about and passionate about. So I was basically just like in my spare time, which I had a lot of at that time, basically like making a business plan to see like how much would it cost for rent and payroll mm-hmm. and insurance, and like how much would we need to charge for, you know, entry fees and memberships and lessons and things like that to be able to make this workable.
Yeah. Well, did you look at different skate parks? I mean, if you've been skating since you were a kid, you've probably been in, you know, outdoor community parks that were free and then gone into ones that weren't that way and mm-hmm. saw different programs, and then being with Skate Like a Girl and seeing that. Did you have anything that you knew, this is what I want it to be, as far as like, I've seen this stuff happen before and I don't want that. I want this, or I do want that for sure.
There's unfortunately not a ton of indoor skate parks in the U.S. Because they're a notoriously difficult business to keep in business. I got to work in an indoor park as a teenager in the suburbs of Chicago. So I got to see a little bit of how it ran then. And there were things about that park that I really liked and things about that park I really didn't like. And so, yeah, I got to, you know, have a few experiences here and there. And really, for me, like, the most important thing was building a place where everyone felt welcome and not just teen boys, mm-hmm. Because a lot of the outdoor parks are very teen boy, young adult men centric, because that's who your skateboarder typically is. But for me, like, the most important thing was building a place where anyone could walk in the door, and even if they're nervous, still feel safe to skate. Mm-hmm. And not every indoor park is like that, but some of them really are. Some of them really work to make that. And that's a lot of what Skate Like a Girl does. Even though they don't own their own space, they work really hard to make the spaces that they use for their programming feel really welcoming and inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, even I took my nephew a long time ago to a skate park with one of his friends who's a girl. And even seeing how that, like, she had to be really brave just to kind of get out there and interact with people, because it was intimidating. It was intimidating just sitting there, like, looking at that. So the inclusivity is basically key, right? So then when you look at building a skate park and then having that be an objective, I guess you had to find the space and you had to like fund it and all that. What year did you actually end up founding the park, and how did you go about starting this business?
I mean, the challenges were everywhere, basically nonstop. but the biggest ones were like funding and finding a space. And finding a space ended up being so much more difficult than I thought it would be initially. And that was partly because I didn't know what I was doing when I started. I didn't understand what occupancy laws are and how those work. I knew what zoning was. I think a lot of people are familiar with the idea of zoning, like this type of business can be on this street or this place. But then there's a whole separate set of rules that say what the building has to have to allow that kind of stuff to work in there. And I didn't understand any of that. So I learned the very hard way by going down to the city and being like, what if I rented this warehouse and put a skate park in it? And they're like, okay, well, you're going to have to upgrade the sprinklers. You're going to have to make it seismically upgraded. And I'm like, okay, I can't afford any of that.
Yeah.
So what do I do? Yeah. So I basically found out what municipalities would be a little bit easier to work with, because the city of Portland is not, which is partly why I ended up in Milwaukee, literally a stone's throw from Portland. I'm in Portland right now. 5 minutes south of me is the skate park, over the border in Milwaukee. It took me 2 to 3 years to find that space from the time I started mm-hmm. looking. And we opened up our doors in April of 2019. So almost 5 years ago now.
Yeah, totally. That's you staying dedicated to an idea for 5 years without it happening. Did you have any ups and downs with it in that time? Did you ever think about giving up, or were you always going to do it?
During that time, I was pretty headstrong, almost in an unhealthy way. I had to grapple with that. I was just like, yeah, if this doesn't happen, then why am I even going to keep living? And I'm like, no, that's not healthy. But at the time, I was not healthy. So, yeah, you know, this has really helped me to get to a much more healthier place. And now I can look at it and be like, you know, this is a thing that's really, really important to me. But if for some reason it ends, like, yeah, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was so headstrong. Like, no one was going to stop me, even if it ended up being something that wasn't as big as I'd hoped. It was, something was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So how is it now being a business owner and someone who's operating a business versus like what you were doing before? I mean, you enjoyed even being a nanny at some point, right? But what's the difference for you?
I mean, there are honestly a lot of similarities in my mind, because like when you're a nanny, you get to choose like who are you working with and why are you working with them and negotiating rates with them. And obviously it's a simpler job because it's a difficult job in that taking care of children is incredibly difficult and undervalued, but there's not so much paperwork.
Yeah.
And legal loopholes and bills and things that you need to pay all the time. In that way, it's a lot more straightforward. But yeah, I find it to be honestly pretty similar, because I'm kind of in charge of my day and how I spend my time. And I like having lots of different things that I have to manage and juggle. And when you're caring for kids, it's like, all right, I got to think about the next three meals. And when are we going to go on a walk? And is this baby tired now? Does he need a nap now? Or should we go play first and then take a nap? And it's a lot of the same stuff when you're running a business. It's like, okay, well, I've got all these different things I need to do, and I can kind of do them when I want to, but others are going to become more pressing at different times. Like, oh shoot, we're running out of this thing, and now I need to allocate the resources to pay for it and the time to go get it, or, you know, whatever. So it feels like it's honestly in a very similar vein to what I was doing before.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's, and it is interesting. And I've talked to people about like when they're losing a job, and some people who are in service industry, for example, and they want to go into another industry, and they worry about not having skills for whatever the industry is. But I always tell people the certain things, like the people skills, right, and the ability to communicate, those things are transferable across everywhere. And so when, yeah, you have those, you can learn a technology or something. But if you don't have those, they're very hard to learn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you are just like interested in learning new things, it's not terribly hard to learn any new skill or job that you need to, you know, depending, yeah, on where you find yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what's been one of the more rewarding things for you otherwise about owning the skate park? Is it maybe unlimited skating for you, or what do you get?
Honestly, like the longer I'm in it, the less time I spend skating. For better or worse, I probably should skate more, and I'm making an effort right now to skate more. But like the most rewarding thing is getting to see people enjoying what we've made, like getting to see people having a great time, getting to see different types of people meeting each other and becoming friends who probably just wouldn't in their everyday life.
Yeah.
And to see like groups of different non-traditional like skaters get to meet each other, like Ed and all of her skate friends. Some, yeah, of those people she would have never met if it wasn't for going to classes at Stronger and going to Skate Like a Girl, yeah, sessions. We have a crew of like old guys who skates together, and I'm the youngest old guy. And a lot of them are like adults who are new to skateboarding. And even for like men in their 40s and 50s, it's super intimidating to be the beginner around all these 20 something dudes. So letting them get to come back and live out something that they missed when they were younger is really cool too. And that's the rewarding part, is just seeing people have joy, you know, getting to do, yeah, what they like.
Well, and that you've created a space where that's allowed, because I'm older compared to a lot of people. I don't know how old you are, but I'm in my mid 40s. And so I will sometimes be in spaces where I'm the oldest person, like when I do stand up comedy. So I'm definitely older than a lot of people in that case. And having a place where that's okay is nice. And I mean, classes are often a place to do that. One thing that you do too is you have special programs, like in the mornings you'll open up earlier for kids on the autism, mm-hmm, spectrum, right? And so what brought you to do a program like that, for example?
Well, we don't currently have any like ongoing autism specific programming, but we've done one-off events here and there. And we also do private lessons specifically for disabled people or people who need a little bit more space or time in the park. A lot of that has been a passion of mine, like my whole life. I grew up with a lot of disabled family members in all sorts of different ways, Down syndrome, autism, ADHD, just like all sorts of things that presented challenges for different people in my family. And that was well before I learned that I was also one of those people, which happened during that mental health crisis when Stronger was being born, when I was just like struggling to function. And that's when I started seeing a therapist and I went to a psychiatrist and gained a few diagnoses over those couple of years. And there's probably more that I haven't figured out yet, but at least found out that I am autistic and dyslexic. Both of those came out of that time. And at the time, I was having really bad panic attacks and things like that as well, which are doing much, much better now. So a lot of anxiety. So yeah, so even before I was dealing with my own struggles with that stuff, it was really important to me to make sure that people with disabilities, physical and intellectual disabilities or developmental differences, all have a chance to access the same stuff that everybody else gets to access. So we try to make it as accessible as possible, you know, for folks to come in.
Yeah. And just thanks for sharing about your diagnosis. And actually, there's a comic I saw her show at Edinburgh Fringe, Sakiza, and she got diagnosed with like dyslexia in her 30s sometime.
Yeah.
In her mid 30s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was I was 30 or 31 or 32, somewhere in there when I started gaining all these diagnoses. And it was just like the stress of that nannying job had gotten so much that it kind of just pushed me past my breaking point. And then it was like, oh, well, let's dig in and find out why life is so hard.
Yeah. So just exacerbated a bunch of things that, do you mind talking about that at all?
No. Yeah. I don't mind at all.
So, I mean, I guess just, I know, and I don't have those diagnoses. I'm more like OCD was a big one when I found that out. And that was in the last year. I mean, it was obvious later on, but
it always is when you look back. Like I feel that so hard. I look back at myself and a child and I go, why did nobody see this? And I actually had some teachers who recommended to my mom multiple times, like that she get me tested, but she figured all they were going to do was put me on Ritalin and she didn't want me on Ritalin. So she's like, what's the point of getting a diagnosis if all they're going to do is put my kid on meds?
Yeah, which is fair in a way, because especially then.
It was the 90s.
Yeah, it's a lot different now. Now they're like, oh, we shouldn't have done that because now look what we've done to people. But did you, even if you didn't have questions, maybe you got answers and that changed the way you viewed yourself, or how did that impact you?
It changed the way I view myself a lot. At first, it was really hard, though. At first, like, I didn't believe it. I was like, how is this even possible? And then I went from that to, like, having a lot of shame and embarrassment to eventually having, like, grace and understanding and acceptance, which has allowed me to, like, let go of a lot of that shame and things that I was carrying around. So it's a lot easier when I'm, like, okay, this thing is hard for me because this is just how my brain works.
Yeah.
And so it lets me like be patient with myself.
Yeah. Well, and probably you acquire these tools now that are available to you, even like if they're cognitive tools or if they're actual. Yeah. Right. So that's that's cool. That's great. And then I think too, I don't know, but I'm just thinking about like the fact that you've been compassionate towards other people for most of your life anyway. It's interesting when you have to apply that grace to yourself all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely the more challenging thing to do, I feel like, for me.
Yeah. Like I would never talk to somebody like me this way, but I will talk to me this way.
Yeah. And I've really gotten a lot better over the past couple of years about that. Much, much better.
Yeah. And then I guess just another thing, I mean, I think it's important to talk about, and I've certainly had guests on the show, at least I try to have guests on the show who, you know, share their stories, but also who represent a lot of different, I guess, communities, or I don't know what the best way to say it is, but you're trans and you came out as trans a couple years ago.
Yeah, not until after I started the skate park. So a cute little video on our website. I don't know if you've seen it, that some college students who are working on, I believe their master's in journalism was the program they were in. They came out and did like a mini documentary. And I said a quote in it that I have keep pulling from myself, which is funny, which is like, I was unintentionally creating the space that I needed to feel safe to come out in. By creating it for other people, I was able to create it for myself at the same time. Yeah, so that was a whole nother journey. And part of me was like, why do I have to keep going through these like personal identity crises? Can these just like please stop? Because I felt like it was just one after another. And before I had gone through that mental health crisis and figured out that I was autistic, we had left our church and our faith and all of that, which was a whole nother thing. And I was like, can we just like, please be chill for a while? And it's been relatively chill since that. But that was in 2019 that I realized that I was also trans and came out.
Yeah, that's, well, so did you grow up in the church?
That journey is a little interesting because I grew up Catholic. And then we kind of stopped being a part of that around the time I started high school because my mom was just kind of over it by that point. I was in Catholic school through freshman year of high school. And then I transferred to public school my sophomore year. And I don't know if it was that year or the next year, all of my friends started going to this evangelical youth group. And so I ended up getting caught up into that because there just wasn't a lot to do in our town. There was like the skate park and the town square, which is interesting because I saw you had a question about Groundhog Day and our town square is where that movie was filmed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's a side note.
Yeah.
But anyway, I basically got swept up into this evangelical youth group and I was like all in. I was like, yes, I am here for Jesus. This is everything. And that was my life until like 2009. Like I ended up going to Bible college and I thought I was going to become a pastor. I led our church's children's ministry, which is another place where I feel like I got a lot of skills that helped me run a skate park because I learned we started a church from nothing and I was part of the team that did that. And they're like, here, all the children's programming, your job, nursery, children's church, after school programs on Wednesdays, like VBS in the summertime. And that is all so, so similar skills to running the same programming at Stronger. So yeah, it was through going to Bible college that I started to deconstruct what I believed. And that was a whole nother crisis that I had to kind of slowly work through over a couple years.
Yeah, well, it's a lot. And it's funny because I wasn't brought up religious. I'd say my mom definitely believed in God and probably still, I would say she still does. And we didn't grow up in a church, though. She grew up going to church and in a very specific way, like the evangelical thing in the Midwest, and then moved to California, and then they weren't really in church anymore. I kind of played with it. Like, I had someone, well, very inappropriately, actually, the assistant principal at my high school would invite me to go to church with him and his family. And I didn't know that, you know, those things that you know were inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't know better, yeah.
Yeah, so now I'm like...
But now you as an adult is like, I would never do that. Why would someone do that?
No, my mom even says like, well, she thought things were weird, but then I seemed safe. And so anyway, then in college, I ended up like, you know, going all in and accepting Christ. And then I did it again. I did it twice. Plus, I was baptized when I was 9 months old, which I still don't think counted.
I was baptized Catholic as a small baby.
Yeah.
And then I did it again in high school.
Yeah. So I got
because I had to do it for me this time and for Jesus.
Right. And it was a big emotional thing. So I get it. And then it was like, but then all the time going, oh, is this really what I believe? And then for me, and I don't know, you know, of course for you, but like for me, a big catalyst for me to just say, you know, F this completely was I was in Texas. My boss at the time wanted me, it was very important to him. I went to church. That was a whole weird thing too. But I was in the church the day after the Defense of Marriage Act was overturned, right? By the Supreme Court. Or it was the day or two after, whatever day that was. It was the Sunday after that. And the people were all upset, you know, this is a mega church in Texas. And they were all just up in arms, you know. And I was sitting up in the back. There was like a balcony and stuff. I was sitting there and the pastor said something like, I know a lot of you are asking what's going to happen. What's going to happen to all these people, you know? And he said something like the gays, you know, it was like that. Because they needed people before them.
Yep.
And what's going to happen to them? And he said, don't worry. God will take care of them in the afterlife. You don't worry about their sins on earth. God will take care of them. Meaning, they're, you know, whatever he'll do. And I was like, I got so mad. I stood up. I made sure the seat slammed up. You know, it was one of those seats when you sit down, it goes down. So I slammed up. I slammed the door on my way out.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to listen to this. I'm not going to sit in this room. Now, I knew they were like this, but I had proof now.
They said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah. And it's like, you know what? I'm not doing this, man.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
That is so similar to what happened to us, except we were in our tiny church that we had helped start that at this point probably had like 30, 40 like regulars and then a few others who would come in and out. Like we never had more than 50 people in that building at a time. And at this point, my wife and I are both on staff at this church. She's helping run like the music and the youth ministry. And I'm running all the children's programming. And they had a guest speaker come in who basically did the same thing, who got up and was like saying the gays this and the gays that, and was like, the gays should not even be allowed in this building. And me and her and one of our friends, we walked out. We were like, no. And like to see all of the other church leadership sitting there and being like, amen, yeah. And we're like, wait, what? What is happening here? You know, that was the beginning of the end for us.
Yeah. And for you, that's so painful because you built this thing and you're with people who are your friends who...
Oh, yeah. We lost almost our entire friend community from that.
Wow.
Yeah. Besides a handful of people who also were like, yeah, no, we don't hate gay people. We're like, cool, good. Let's hang out.
But you just find out who the people are. Want to make sure I'm using the right words, and I didn't discuss this with you before, which is great. But like you started to transition, I guess, from 2019.
Yeah. That was in 2019. And it's like, I feel like transitions are never, for some people, they have a moment where it feels done. I don't know if it's ever done because you're always like kind of figuring out who you are and how you want the world to perceive you.
Even as a just like I'd say, I guess, cisgender person, like, there are parts of my life that are changing constantly that might not be related to my sex or gender or anything like that.
Yeah.
But other things, right? So did you, I guess, thinking about when you came out when you were younger, whenever that was, right, with your sexuality and then coming out later with gender, like, did you find anything different or did you feel... Like, I came out as bisexual, and I haven't said that even on this podcast, I don't think, last year, and it was really difficult because I was holding on to this idea that no matter what, I could be straight, because similar to you in the sense that you, like, can I stop doing stuff? Like, I have MS, so I thought that was enough. So why am I going to add a complication to my life, was my idea, right? So I'm just going to be straight, because I can't, because that's... And I couldn't anymore. And it was like this big relief because there was a lot of shame I held, which was silly in a way, but also is my experience. So I guess, and then the shame, it has to go away. And it's same with anything. So did you find any difference like for you or any relief? Or I don't know if you want to talk about any of that, but just.
Yeah. Like, well, I never had like a young coming out moment. I didn't realize also that I feel like I'm definitely on the like asexual spectrum.
Okay.
But I didn't really realize that. Like I fell in love with my best friend. So it was just like, oh, okay, cool. We're straight. Now neither of us are. But at the time, so I never had any kind of like queer coming out as a young person. Oh, but I had like a sister who was openly out as bi, and then my other sister would come out later. And, you know, lots of gay friends and family, like tons of them.
Yeah.
So it was not like a strange thing to have queer people around. I just didn't realize I was one of them yet until 2019, which again, looking back is absurd. Not everyone has that like kind of stereotypical, I always knew trans story, but I kind of do. So like, even as a kid, my cousins, we would hang out with our cousins a lot. Both of my parents had a bunch of siblings. So we had a bunch of cousins and somehow they all had kids at like the same time. So we all had these like pairs. And we would always split into boys and girls. The older siblings were the boys. And I was always that all the time. And it made perfect sense. And none of the kids questioned it at all. Like, they were like, yes, all the older siblings are the boys and all the younger siblings are the girls. And like, the parents sometimes would be like, is this okay? Whatever, you know, and the kids did not question it in the least. And it was like, in a way, I got to live a pretty affirmed childhood for several years because my mom let me cut my hair short. She let me dress however I wanted. You know, I just didn't get to change my name or pronouns because neither of us knew what being trans was. We didn't know that was an option, you know? So for a couple of years there, it was actually pretty great. And then, you know, you hit puberty, and then that's when things were really, really hard for me, basically from 12 to 32.
Wow. But now.
Yeah. I don't remember what the original question about coming out was.
I guess what it was like, I mean, for you, like, or what it is like now. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah. You know? It was the most terrifying thing in my life. Like I had said, I had these other big life transitions with faith and then coming out as autistic, which was another like coming out. You have to tell people if you want them to know. You know, and not everybody does, but all my good friends do. And I kind of had learned from experience that it's best to just rip the Band-Aid off. I was like, I just need to do this and get it over with. But it's like a process, you know, because at first you just tell your partner, you know, like, I think this is what's going on. And then you tell your really, really close friends and then a little bit bigger circle of friends. And then you're like, can you try these names and pronouns for me and kind of see how it feels? And, you know, once I kind of got to the point where I felt like I was living two lives, like I had my work life and the rest of my life, where at work I was still going by one name and then everywhere else I was going by a different name. I was like, it's time to just rip that Band-Aid off. So I made a video for the skate park's Instagram and was like, this is the deal. This is what you're going to call me now. Like, it's okay if you mess it up for a while, but we'll get there. And that was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know what people are going to do. And then one thing I was surprised by is like how once you come out, you have to all the time. Like, it never stops. Like,
no, it never stops. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for you, it's different than me, but like, still, like, there are times when I go, oh, wait, you're saying that thing to me, but you don't know that you're actually talking about me.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like when you get to a place, like, most of the time now, people read me as a man, which is great.
Yes.
That's what I want. But then they'll say really weird, sexist or transphobic stuff to my face because they think I'm just a short cis guy. And I'm like, bro, no, we don't do this here. Like, what are you doing? Like, the stories that men tell me now that they see me as one of them are insane. Like, that random people will just say to me, and I'm like, this is not the part of this world I wanted. But I've got to live both sides now, and now I can tell people, like, oh my goodness, you would not believe what men will just tell other men, thinking it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. And luckily, all of my friends, I feel like I have a relatively good, like, I don't know, compass or radar for finding, like, good people to surround myself with. So, like, none of my friends who are my good friends are people who do that crap. But working with skaters and being in a public business where just all sorts of random people come in is when I run into this stuff most. And they don't realize, one, that they're talking to the owner of the business and that this person is trans. Yeah. They're just saying wild stuff to me. And it's always hard to navigate, like, when do I call this out and when do I just let it go? Because I know that they're just some random dude who's looking around at the space and then they're going to walk out and I'm never going to see him again. So, you know, a lot of times I'm just like, okay, say your stuff, get out, bye.
Yeah. And it's all learned, right? It's all learned behavior. And I think the men who have learned to not do that took a lot of effort because they were taught to do that.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah. If not directly from, you know, their families, then from TV and culture and school and, you know, the places that they just socialize.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And then, and even I'd say, you know, like just again, any issues or any, I mean, I hate to say issues because a lot of these things are all people's lives, right? Like you can say, oh, there's trans issues or there's race issues or whatever. But then there's also, there are people's lives.
Yeah.
They're not issues. They're actually lives.
They're real people. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like real, like, oh, if you say, oh, there's a race issue. No, there's actually people who are experiencing things because of their race. So that's the issues, like, right? And so I think it's interesting just knowing that how much people have to learn and unlearn and relearn and and all that. And like, but yeah, it's not always worth saying something. And sometimes it is. And, you know, it's hard to know when. But yeah, I can imagine that's difficult. So, but I mean, thanks for, you know, talking through all this too. I really appreciate it because I think, you know, maybe someone will be listening who's never heard any conversation like this. I appear to have never had such a conversation. I'm like, but yeah, like, no, it's really good. I think it is telling that you, even before you realized anything about yourself, were trying to live a life in such a way that you were being inclusive of others and sensitive to them and stuff. Because
thank you.
It's important, you know?
Mm-hmm. And if everybody was doing that, man, how much better would this world be? Just, and I'm not like, and I don't even think I'm super duper good at it, but I'm just being intentional and trying, you know? And that's really all it takes.
Yeah, it's not being perfect or never saying anything wrong. I mean, I certainly do. And then I certainly go, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Or, oh, why did I, like, sometimes I'll ask myself, why did I even think that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but then that's how you challenge things. And I think if you're willing to challenge yourself to do good most of the time and to be compassionate and all that, then yeah, you're right. I mean, and when you're not, then, you know, challenge yourself to do it next time. But so AJ, getting back to the park, just because we went off on some tangents, I would say. So both of us were around when we were younger, around people at the business. My parents had an auto repair shop and your parents had the restaurants, and I would see them kind of struggle with their business sometimes they'd do well, but they were always having to work really hard at it. And have you found that kind of thing with you? I mean, you opened a year before a pandemic, so that's one
thing. Yeah, that was definitely a huge challenge. We were literally open for business for about 11 months, and then COVID hit, and our first winter went great. Our first winter went awesome. We could not get all the people in the space who wanted to be there. So COVID happened. We were closed on and off several times. Like, Oregon was one of the strictest states for business closures, which I don't have any problem with, except that it's just hard to survive. Like, I think that stuff is important. And actually, through that process, the business next door to us ended up calling it quits the second or third time everything shut down.
Yeah.
Or not everything, just restaurants and gyms, which includes us. Everything else got to stay open, but they shut down restaurants and gyms. And so the business next door to us ended up closing up. And I took that as an opportunity to expand. And I talked to the landlord and convinced them, even though we're behind on rent, please let us have this space. And no one else was going to rent it at the time. So they seemed pretty open to it. So we got the space next door, but that more than doubled our rent. And ever since then, it has been a monumental challenge to keep that rent paid. Like, the rent is absurd. And it's really, like, not for the, you know, area we're in and the size of space that it is. Yeah. But a skate park just doesn't make that much money to be able to pay rent on these massive spaces that we need to be able to operate.
Yeah.
And now that we have so much space, we're able to do so, so, so much more. We can have so many more people in, and they have so much space. We have different types of things to ride. That new space is, like, probably the most popular of the space is kind of divided into two giant rooms. And that, what we call the expansion, is probably more popular than the original park that we built, just in general, when people are coming in and riding. But yeah, it is just an unending struggle to keep the bills paid. And I think from the outside, people see this really cool space that's obviously, like, doing a lot of things right. And we have, like, good branding and a good logo. And people are like, oh yeah, they're killing it over there. People ask me all the time, like, when are you going to open your second location? I'm like, after this one cannot even necessarily be profitable, but can just like maintain itself.
Yeah.
That's when we'll consider it. But right now, like, we need a lot of community support. And I'm constantly like reminding people, like, we need you actively supporting us to survive. Yeah. Like, we're always like playing catch up on rent all the time. But I've also learned so, so much. And I'm really excited to take that moving forward. Like, I've learned what's popular at the park and what's not, like what works and makes money and what events are we going to lose money on and kind of how to balance those better. So really, like, for us, it just comes down to doing lots of programming, classes, camps for kids, lessons, all of that stuff is really what keeps us afloat and not the open skate sessions.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I mean, that's got to be hard. And a lot of business, I mean, it takes a few years for them to really make money. Yeah. People think, oh, I opened a business, it's busy.
Yeah.
Good. But yeah, so no, it's a good point.
Yeah. And I remind myself that we're like, essentially, like, kind of started over in 2022. Like, really, we shouldn't be considering 2019 our start date. We got a little heads up on being able to market ourselves, you know, because then we were closed for most of 2020. So, and then people were still being really careful and staying at home a lot in 2021. And it wasn't until 2022 that people started going to things again.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, same over here. And now, now it's just kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, it is just weird. People are like, we're doing stuff, even though we know there's risks, we're just doing it.
Yeah. And then, oh, my friend got COVID. That's, I forgot about it, but I didn't. But
yeah. Like, totally. Oh, surprise, not surprise.
I know, exactly. Cool. Well, one thing I like to ask guests, like, if they have an advice or mantra they want to share with people, just something they like to impart, or maybe it's something that they do every day or.
I guess for me, like, one thing that I have to constantly remind myself is to, like, slow down from the busyness. It's really easy to keep yourself busy all the time without, like, actually paying attention to what you're doing. It's easy to go from I'm doing stuff at work and running, and I'm doing stuff at home to, like, actually just, like, slow down and take stock and be mindful here and there. Mm-hmm. I fall into that all the time of, like, not taking time to just breathe and sit and just be mindful of what's going on in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Because when we have a lot to do, and you definitely do, yeah, it's hard to remember. You can get more done if you slow down a little bit, honestly.
Yeah, and it's just like taking care of yourself, because if you just keep running yourself ragged all the time, you won't be able to keep going. You'll burn out. And I experienced that the really, really hard way back in like 2014, 2015. I don't even remember. I need to go back and figure out what the years for all these things are. So I have to force myself even to just take little moments here and there. Like, all right, I'm just going to go sit outside for 5 minutes. No phone, no nothing.
Yeah, totally. Great. Now we get to the fun five. These are five questions I ask every guest, just because it's fun for me. So the first one, what is the oldest t-shirt you have and still wear?
That's funny, because I kind of outgrew all my t-shirts because in 2019, I started taking testosterone and it made my shoulders get big. So I outgrew all my shirts. So probably the oldest one I have that still fits is one of our early stronger shirts. Like early before the park opened, we did like a fundraiser where we printed up, I don't know, like 2 or 3 dozen t-shirts that people ordered. And I think that's probably the oldest one I have that I can actually wear.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you experience temperature increase too? My one friend said like their temperature
was
warmer.
I'm hot all the time. I used to be cold all the time. Now I'm warm all the time. I can handle cold temperatures in a way I never could, but also I cannot handle the summer at all. Like, the summer is brutal. So yes, I did.
Yeah, my friend's like, I saved on heating now. I was like, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no. We're always like kind of arguing about that, because I'm like, open all the windows, it's ice cold. And my family's like, what are you doing? We are freezing. And I'm like, but I'm hot. And they're like, but we're cold. And I'm like, well, you guys can put on sweaters. I can't take off more clothes.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can only take off so many clothes till there's none left.
Well, that's what I made this joke, which is dumb, but I'll say it on here because maybe someone will think it's funny, but that I think nudists are the people who suffer the most during a heat wave because we can all remove layers, but they can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. So the second one, if every day was really Groundhog's Day, which this is a callback now because you mentioned Groundhog's Day earlier, what song would you have your alarm clock set to play every morning?
That is a really hard question because I don't know what vibe I want to wake up to. I do actually have like a funny meme song set as my alarm and my ringtone. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. He's a prolific internet creator called, his name is Neil Cicierga. And he makes really, really funny, goofy, not quite parody. Some are parody, some are mashups. And I have one of his songs as my ringtone and my alarm. So I'm sorry if that's weird and not the direction you were looking for.
All right. And that's what you, that's what you'd wake up to. All right. Next one. Coffee or tea or neither?
Tea all the time. I got a cup right here.
Nice.
Tea. Black tea.
Cool. Lipton or some other one?
This is Stash. That's kind of my go-to because they're like easy bagged teas, but they're a lot better than the cheaper brands like Lipton.
Okay.
And then I don't have to, okay. I used to be all about loose leaf tea and now that's just, it's too much of a pain in my butt. So I think Stash is actually based out of Portland, but they're like a national brand. I don't know. They're good.
Oh, that's cool. Well, yeah. Oh, that's good. I'll have to check that out. And then can you think of a time that you either like laughed so hard you cried or something that just always makes you crack up when you think about it?
Oh, since I'm already talking about, like I talked about Neil Cicierga before, there's a certain song of his where he takes like a Lenny Kravitz song and remixes it and puts it like, makes it really hilarious. And my brother and I are constantly texting it to each other anytime we hear the actual version of the song, which I can't even remember what song it is because I can only think of the like weird parody version of it. We're always texting each other about like dragonflies and stuff. And it cracks me up every single time. So like literally this man is, you probably know something he's made without realizing he's the person behind it because he's had so many viral YouTube videos, just an unending amount.
Cool. And then the last one, who inspires you right now?
Man, that is an excellent question. But I feel like when it comes to like celebrities or big name authors or anything, I've been burned so many times that I've stopped like idolizing those types of people. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were just talking about this, like with the Russell Brand thing. We were like, all right, like what other people? Not that either of us particularly cares about Russell Brand that much, but it's just like, all right, if it turns out that all these people are terrible, like who's going to be left? Like, are there going to be any actors out there that we can idolize anymore? Or are they all like this? So I feel like I have a hard time because a lot of my like most like inspirational people are people who are dead because then nothing, we can't find out anything. Like, Mr. Rogers is probably a good safe one. He's very inspirational and a wonderful human. I also am always into basically everything Carl Sagan ever said. He was another great person. So like, you know, a lot of the people who I'm most inspired by are no longer living. Before we found out he was terrible, I used to really like Elon Musk. But that was several, many years ago, like 10 years ago when I moved, around the time I moved to Portland, I was like, oh, this guy's really interesting and he's doing all this cool stuff. And now I'm like, no. So I'm always really careful about that. I'm like, I can't put anyone on too high of a pedestal because the higher you put them, the harder the fall is. For so sure. I don't know if this is a terrible answer or not.
No, and people say all different stuff, so it could be anyone. So no, that's great. Cool. Well, before I let you go, AJ, I just want to know, like, where do you want people to find you or the skate park, and where do you want them to follow?
Well, the skate park is kind of everywhere. We are the most active on Instagram, and it's just stronger_skatepark. Really easy to find. We also have our own website that has like lots of info on all the things we do. It's strongerskatepark.com. Again, real easy. I am trying to get more active on TikTok with the skate park. So if people are on TikTok, we're there. And then my own personal Instagram is A_J_waters.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, AJ. It was really fun talking to you, and I'm glad we got this chance to do that. I'm trying to catch up a fly while we're talking. But yeah, so anyway, it's been really great. And thanks so much for taking the time and being so open and honest too. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. I really like getting to do things like this once in a while, so I appreciate you reaching out.
Thanks for listening. You can learn more about the guest and what was talked about in the show notes. Joe Mafia created the music you're listening to. You can find him on Spotify at Joe, M-A-F-F-I-A. Rob Metke does all the design, for which I am so grateful. You can find him online by searching Rob, M-E-T-K-E. Please leave a review if you like the show and get in touch via feedback or guest ideas. The pod is on all the social channels at More Than Work Pod or at Robbia Comedy on TikTok. While being kind to others, don't forget to be kind to yourself.